This is Tofu Dave on your community radio station with another edition of Between the Covers, a literature quickie. And boy, I'm excited today. A real special book, Willie Nelson, All the Albums, written by author Jeffrey Himes. Jeffrey, do I have you on the line?
Yes, here I am.
Well, listen, Jeffrey, I was excited to get this book, not only because, of course, I love Willie's music. I met him once when he came through the area years ago, probably about 20 years ago, and he was just so gracious. And your book really excites me because, with the possible exception of a CD I just got in the mail from Sony that I'll get to, you've covered just about every Willie Nelson album, and you're a brave guy. Because not only do you review every single album, you do what I always complain nobody does anymore. You're willing to rate them.
That's right. Well, I've been a music critic for a long time, so it's in my blood.
Yeah, well, you know, let me jump right to the rating, because I love it. And this will be a little bit of a spoiler for people that haven't read the book, but I think it'll entice them. Could you... I'm going to put you on the spot here, Jeffrey, author of Willie Nelson, All the Albums, The Stories Behind the Music. What is your personal number one, most best, all-time Willie Nelson album?
So in the appendix to the book, I actually have a list of 1 through 152 of the albums ranked in order. And the number one is Phases and Stages.
And why do you pick that as number one? What makes that stand out for you? Because he boy, I mean, Willie did over 100 albums, right?
Yeah, well, it's 152 albums that I write about in the book, and then there's some other, you know, there's a lot of like budget anthologies and stuff that I didn't bother with. But the thing about Phases and Stages is that after spending 17 years with RCA Records and sort of butting heads against the sort of Nashville system, he signed with Atlantic Records and was working with Jerry Wexler, the famous producer who, you know, worked with Ray Charles and Aretha Franklin. And they were very simpatico and really had this cycle of songs. It was sort of his second concept album. The Redheaded Stranger would be his third concept album, but this one, Phases and Stages, the concept was is that side one would be the perspective on a divorce by a woman, and side two would be perspective on the same relationship from the man's point of view. This is back when albums had two sides, and you know, it's a very ambitious kind of songwriting project, and he pulls it off, and you get, he gives full strength to each point of view, so you get, you know, you really do get both sides of the situation. There's some great songs. Jerry Wexler was very tapped into that sort of trans genre kind of approach to music that Willie was pursuing, and it all sort of worked wonderfully.
Right, and that album came out back in the early 70s, so it was a time, you know, when music was maybe a little bit more segmented, might be the word, than it is today. So listen, Jeffrey, again, your book, Willie Nelson, All the Albums, The Stories Behind the Music, I said I'm going to put you on the spot, and here in community radio, we do that to authors, so let's go to the opposite route. Out of over 100 albums, you graded 3 of his albums an F. Brave thing to do. And let me tell you, one of them I was a little surprised by, which is a recent album, 2005, Countryman. Why did you grade that an F?
Well, that's his reggae album, which he had been trying to make for a dozen years or so, and just, it just wasn't coming together. And then finally they just threw up their hands and put it out. And it was a very sort of, it was a good idea at the time, as we say in the music business.
Right.
the obvious connection to reggae was that, you know, the sort of advocacy of marijuana that, you know, Nelson shared with many reggae artists, and he, you know, he performs with them, but it just, you know, it just didn't work.
Reggae is not really in Willie's blood in some sense.
Yeah, and it could have worked, but it didn't. And it, you know, I think it was worth trying, but you know, I was saying that, you know, it's not really an artistic risk that you're taking unless there's a chance that you might fail. So.
Yes. Yes.
And for all the brave experimentation he did that did work, you know, sometimes it didn't work. The thing, getting back to Phases and Stages for a minute, is that it was a very pivotal time because he was coming out of this sort of Nashville, you know, star making machinery and finally being able to do his vision of things. And those Atlantic records are great, great records, but they, you know, Atlantic didn't really know how to work with country radio, so they weren't hits. But it sort of set Willie up for Redheaded Stranger and Stardust and all those huge hits that he had with Columbia immediately after. So it was very crucial transition.
True, true. And, you know, the early 70s, that's already 50 years ago.
Right.
In the intervening time, it's interesting, two things seem to have happened. One is Willie became himself sort of a pantheonic figure, a shining
mm-hmm.
light, a star to many younger, later on, country and rock and roll musicians. And on the other hand, he also held a lot of them up in the lights. He looked up, and I'm speaking artistically, musically, to
mm-hmm.
many other, not only country people, rock and rollers, folk singers, as you said, reggae. And I want to get into two areas. One is, I know that I think it's Sony just put out a little posthumous record called Working Man, and it's Willie Nelson singing the songs of Merle Haggard. And a lot of those that came out are interesting. I'd say some of them work, some of them don't.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, and now I'll ask your correction on this because I'm not really an expert, but to me, those two men who are now pantheons of music, they were friends, they knew each other, they respected each other, but to me, they were very different people. They were very different figures in how they went through the artistic musical world. And I was surprised at how close they seemed to become. What's your take on Willie and Merle?
I mean, what you say is true. I mean, they, you know, Willie was very laid back and sort of live and let live kind of thing. And Merle has sort of a more combative relationship to the world. But musically, they were actually very similar because they both came out of that southwestern U.S. country swing tradition, which is very different from the eastern kind of country music, which is more sort of...
That's a great point.
That sort of Carter family, and, Nashville sound. And they both were big Bob Wills fans. They both did, you know, a lot of Bob Wills songs and came out of that sort of swinging, you know, dance hall version. You know, Merle Haggard once told me in an interview, he was trying to explain the difference between Western country music and Eastern country music. And he said, "Jeff, you know why you're not allowed to have sex standing up in Alabama?" I said, "No, Merle, why?" He said, "Because they might think you're dancing."
Well said.
And, you know, and so that sort of Texas, California, Oklahoma school of music was dance music in a way that, you know, the eastern part was more sort of, you know, church concerts in churches and schoolhouses where you sort of sat and listened to the music.
Jeffrey Hine, author of the book, Willie Nelson, All the Albums, the Stories Behind the Music. And Jeffrey, you're leading me to another thought, because we're down here in North Carolina. We have a lot of the eastern roots, the mountain roots. You know, we've had all sorts of people that you and I both know coming out of Northeast, southwestern Virginia, Appalachia, and North Carolina, up and down. And I know you did another book, In-Law Country, maybe a couple of years ago, that sort of shifts into some of those type of roots. Can you tell me a little bit about that research and that book?
Sure. It came out last December. It was published by the Country Music Hall of Fame. And what it is it's my argument that there's a whole sort of subgenre of country music that never got its due. And it's this group of people, which includes Emmylou Harris, Roseanne Cash, Rodney Crowell, Guy Clark, Steve Earle, Ricky Skaggs, some producers and pickers that were involved in the same scene. And they were all creating this sort of new kind of country music that was reflected the influence of Bob Dylan and the Beatles, but also reflected this sort of connection to a much older tradition of country music than what was on the radio. And it was also music about marriages, new kind of marriages where women and men were more on a more equal footing, and there was sort of this challenge of negotiating how to move forward in that thing. And, you know, a lot of these people were married to each other. Rodney and Roseanne were married to each other. Emily was married to her producer, Brian Ahern. Ricky Skaggs and Sharon White were married. Guy Clark and Susanna Clark. And so they were, you know, living as, you know, two working professional marriages, writing about those kind of marriages and creating a new kind of music to make it happen. I always thought that the reason they didn't get the proper recognition is they didn't have a snappy name the way the Outlaws did. And so I gave them the name In-Laws, which is, you know, both a pun on Outlaws and also a reference to their sort of their marital ties that sort of were the glue to this whole thing. And I think that in the Willie book, you know, I just wanted to point out to people that although I do a little box about each of the 152 albums, it's not a discography, it's not a coffee table book. It's a 150,000 word narrative where I tell the story of Willie's whole life through his recordings and then using the context of what happened to him off stage as sort of the background. Most of the books about Willie, you know, the music's in the background and the sort of escapades and divorces and so forth are in the foreground. So I'm just reversing the emphasis. You know, music is really the reason we care about Willie, so I wanted to put that front and center.
Yes, sir. Fine words, and I agree with you totally on both aspects. I haven't seen your book, In-Law Country, but I sure want to take a look at it, because a lot of the people you mentioned in that book are heroes of mine, and boy, I can't imagine how to give them more recognition, but we sure should. And this book, Willie Nelson, All the Albums, you're right, your focus really is on the stories behind, but you did a great job, Jeffrey, of also reviewing the music, so I want to thank you for that. My listeners, I'm sure, are going to be eager to snap up some copies of the book, because they're all fans of Willie. I think most of them are. And any last things you'd like them to know before we wrap it up for the day?
I also published poetry, so I've had a couple of poetry books come out this year. But, you know, in terms of these country music books, you know, they're available on Amazon and similar outlets. And I think that, you know, in the same way I'm making an argument in In-Law Country about the nature of their music. And in the Willie book, I'm sort of making this argument that he was a way, the reason he sort of endures for us is that he was sort of a living example of how you could deal with heartbreak from broken romances or broken careers or, you know, not enough money and still keep your dignity and self-respect, you know. And so in those song after song, as I go through his long, long, long catalog, you see him, you know, sort of describing how painful these losses can be, but how, you know, you can rise above them and move forward.
Fine words. Jeffrey Himes, H-I-M-E-S, his new book, All the Albums, the Stories Behind the Music and Mr. Himes Every Day. I'm trying to put those words into practice. Maintain my dignity. This is Tofu Dave. You've gotten another edition of Between the Covers, a literature quickie under your belt. Please be with us next time for another fascinating